Chapter 45. Said it was your doom to suspect every man who courted you of being an adventurer, and what made you angriest was men's imputing to you the folly of believing that they courted you for your own sake. Did you not say so? Very likely, was the answer, in a low murmur. It was a bitter word. Well, at least one man who has seen women as plenty as flowers in May has lingered about you for your own sake. And since he is one whom you can never marry, you will believe him. There is an argument in favor of some other man. But don't give yourself for a meal to a minotaur like Bolt. I shall go now and pack. I shall make my excuses to Mrs. Arrowpoint. Klezmer rose as he ended, and walked quickly toward the door. You must take this heap of manuscript, then said Catherine, suddenly making a desperate effort. As he had risen to fetch the heap from another table, Klezmer came back, and they had the length of the folio sheets between them. Why should I not marry the man who loves me, if I love him? Said Catherine. To her the effort was something like the leap of a woman from the deck into the lifeboat. It would be too hard, impossible, you could not carry it through. I am not worth what you would have to encounter. I will not accept the sacrifice. It would be thought a mésalliance for you, and I should be liable to the worst accusations. Is it the accusations you are afraid of? I am afraid of nothing but that we should miss the passing of our lives together. The decisive word had been spoken. There was no doubt concerning the end willed by each. There only remained the way of arriving at it, and Catherine determined to take the straightest possible. She went to her father and mother in the library, and told them that as he had promised to marry Klezmer. Mrs. Arrowpoint's state of mind was pitiable. Imagine Jean-Jacques, after his essay on the corrupting influence of the arts, waking up among children of nature who had no idea of grilling the raw bone they offered him for breakfast with a primitive flint knife. Or Saint Just, after fervidly denouncing all recognition of preeminence, receiving a vote of thanks for the unbroken mediocrity of his speech, which warranted the dullest patriots in delivering themselves at equal length. Something of the same sort befell the authoress of Asso, when what as he had safely demanded of the dead Leonora was enacted by her own Catherine. It is hard for us to live up to our own eloquence, and keep pace with our winged words, while we are treading the solid earth, and are liable to heavy dining. Besides, it has long been understood that the proprieties of literature are not those of practical life. Mrs. Arrowpoint naturally wished for the best of everything. She not only liked to feel herself at a higher level of literary sentiment than the ladies with whom she associated. She wished not to be behind them in any point of social consideration. While Klezmer was seen in the light of a patronized musician, his peculiarities were picturesque and acceptable. But to see him by a sudden flash in the light of her son-in-law gave her a burning sense of what the world would say. And the poor lady had been used to represent her Catherine as a model of excellence. Under the first shock she forgot everything but her anger, and snatched at any phrase that would serve as a weapon. If Klezmer has presumed to offer himself to you, your father shall horsewhip him off the premises. Pray, speak, Mr. Arrowpoint. The father took his cigar from his mouth, and rose to the occasion by saying, "This will never do, Cath." "Do?" cried Mrs. Arrowpoint. "Who in their senses ever thought it would do? You might as well say poisoning and strangling will not do. It is a comedy you have got up, Catherine. Else you are mad." "I am quite sane and serious, Mama, and Herr Klezmer is not to blame. He never thought of my marrying him. I found out that he loved me, and loving him, I told him I would marry him." "Leave that unsaid, Catherine," said Mrs. Arrowpoint, bitterly. "Everyone else will say that for you. You will be a public fable. Everyone will say that you must have made an offer to a man who has been paid to come to the house who is nobody knows what, a gypsy, a Jew, a mere bubble of the earth." "Never mind, Mama," said Catherine, indignant in her turn. "We all know he is a genius as Tasso was. Those times were not these, nor is klezmer tasso, said Mrs. Arrowpoint, getting more heated. T there is no sting in that sarcasm, except the sting of undutifulness. I am sorry to hurt you, Mama. But I will not give up the happiness of my life to ideas that I don't believe in and customs I have no respect for. You have lost all sense of duty, then? You have forgotten that you are our only child, that it lies with you to place a great property in the right hands? What are the right hands? My grandfather gained the property in trade. Mr. Arrowpoint, will you sit by and hear this without speaking? I am a gentleman, Kath. We expect you to marry a gentleman, said the father, exerting himself. And a man connected with the institutions of this country, said the mother. A woman in your position has serious duties. Where duty and inclination clash, she must follow duty. I don't deny that, said Catherine, getting colder in proportion to her mother's heat. But one may say very true things, and apply them falsely. People can easily take the sacred word duty as a name for what they desire anyone else to do. Your parents' desire makes no duty for you, then? Yes, within reason. But before I give up the happiness of my life, Catherine, it will not be your happiness, said Mrs. Arrowpoint, in her most raven-like tones. Well, what seems to me my happiness, before I give it up, I must see some better reason than the wish that I should marry a nobleman, or a man who votes with a party, that he may be turned into a nobleman. I feel at liberty to marry the man I love and think worthy, unless some higher duty forbids. And so it does, Catherine, though you are blinded and cannot see it. It is a woman's duty not to lower herself. You are lowering yourself. Mr. Arrowpoint, will you tell your daughter what is her duty? You must see, Catherine, that klezmer is not the man for you, said Mr. Arrowpoint. He won't do at the head of estates. He has a deuced foreign look as an unpractical man. I really can't see what that has to do with it, Papa. The land of England has often passed into the hands of foreigners, Dutch soldiers, sons of foreign women of bad character. If our land were sold tomorrow, it would very likely pass into the hands of some foreign merchant on change. It is in everybody's mouth that successful swindlers may buy up half the land in the country. How can I stem that tide? It will never do to argue about marriage, Kath, said Mr. Arrowpoint. It's no use getting up the subject like a parliamentary question. We must do as other people do. We must think of the nation and the public good. I can't see any public good concerned here, Papa, said Catherine. Why is it to be expected of any heiress that she should carry the property gained in trade into the hands of a certain class? That seems to be a ridiculous mishmash of superannuated customs and false ambition. I should call it a public evil. People had better make a new sort of public good by changing their ambitions. That is mere sophistry, Catherine, said Mrs. Arrowpoint. Because you don't wish to marry a nobleman, you are not obliged to marry a mountebank or a charlatan. I cannot understand the application of such words, Mama. No, I dare say not, rejoined Mrs. Arrowpoint, with significant scorn. You have got to a pitch at which we are not likely to understand each other. It can't be done, Kath, said Mr. Arrowpoint, wishing to substitute a better-humored reasoning for his wife's impetuosity. A man like klezmer can't marry such a property as yours. It can't be done. It certainly will not be done, said Mrs. Arrowpoint, imperiously. Where is the man? Let him be fetched. I cannot fetch him to be insulted, said Catherine. And nothing will be achieved by that. I suppose you would wish him to know that in marrying you, he will not marry your fortune, said Mrs. Arrowpoint. Certainly, if it were so, I should wish him to know it. Then you had better fetch him. Catherine only went into the music room and said, Come. She felt no need to prepare klezmer. Herr Klesmer, said Mrs. Arrowpoint, with a rather contemptuous stateliness, it is unnecessary to repeat what has passed between us and our daughter. Mr. Arrowpoint will tell you our resolution. Your marrying is out of the question, said Mr. Arrowpoint, rather too heavily weighted with his task, and standing in an embarrassment unrelieved by a cigar. It is a wild scheme altogether. A man has been called out for less. You have taken a base advantage of our confidence, burst in Mrs. Arrowpoint, unable to carry out her purpose, and leave the burden of speech to her husband. Klesmer made a low bow in silent irony. The pretension is ridiculous. You had better give it up, and leave the house at once, continued Mr. Arrowpoint. He wished to do without mentioning the money. I can give up nothing without reference to your daughter's wish, said Klesmer. My engagement is to her. It is useless to discuss the question, said Mrs. Arrowpoint. We shall never consent to the marriage. If Catherine disobeys us, we shall disinherit her. You will not marry her fortune. It is right you should know that. Madam, her fortune has been the only thing I have had to regret about her. But I must ask her if she will not think the sacrifice greater than I am worthy of. It is no sacrifice to me, said Catherine, except that I am sorry to hurt my father and mother. I have always felt my fortune to be a wretched fatality of my life. You mean to defy us, then? Said Mrs. Arrowpoint. I mean to marry Herr Klesmer, said Catherine, firmly. He had better not count on our relenting, said Mrs. Arrowpoint, whose manner suffered from that impunity and insult which has been reckoned among the privileges of women. Madam, said Klesmer, certain reasons forbid me to retort. But understand that I consider it out of the power either of you, or of your fortune, to confer on me anything that I value. My rank as an artist is of my own winning, and I would not exchange it for any other. I am able to maintain your daughter, and I ask for no change in my life but her companionship. You will leave the house, however, said Mrs. Arrowpoint. I go at once, said Klesmer, bowing and quitting the room. Let there be no misunderstanding, Mama, said Catherine. I consider myself engaged to Herr Klesmer, and I intend to marry him. The mother turned her head away, and waved her hand in sign of dismissal. It's all very fine, said Mr. Arrowpoint, when Catherine was gone, but what the deuce are we to do with the property? There is Harry Brendel. He can take the name. Harry Brendel will get through it all in no time, said Mr. Arrowpoint, relighting his cigar. And thus, with nothing settled but the determination of the lovers, Klesmer had left Quetcham. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.